Southwestern Family of Companies welcomes you to the Action Catalyst. Each week, our diversely and amazingly accomplished guests share their insights and inspirations to help us ignite our own. So let's invest attention together to breathe, to reflect and refocus, and decisively defeat that voice we call Mr. Mediocrity. Then let's enjoy moving forward to make a positive difference in our world.
Hello, listener. This is Zach Troutman, producer for the Action Catalyst podcast. And with the 2021 Olympic Games, originally scheduled for the 2020 Olympic Games, now officially underway, we wanted to dig through the archives and bring you some words of wisdom from a pair of Olympians that we've been fortunate enough to have as guests on the Action Catalyst. First up, Johnny Quinn, professional speaker and former professional football player with the Buffalo Bills and the Green Bay Packers, he tells the story of his unbelievable journey from the NFL to the United States Olympic bobsled team to competing in the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, and getting trapped in a bathroom in the Olympic Village.
You know, growing up in Texas, I played Texas high school football. So from a young age, I knew I wanted to play in the NFL one day. And but there was a problem with that because I'm only 5'11 and 7'8". I'm not even 6 foot. The scouts wouldn't even give me the 6 foot. And so I knew at a young age that if I'm going to play in the NFL or go after my big dream, I'm going to have to start out working some people. And so I found one scholarship to the University of North Texas 2 days before signing day. You know, I just got in and I had a very fortunate college career. I left as the school's all-time leading receiver. And so my college career went very well. And so when it was time to turn pro, my family, we interviewed 8 different agents and we found the agent that was right for my family. And I remember when the NFL draft came, I did not get drafted. And I was confused because I was always told if you produce, you get rewarded, right? I mean, if you make all the plays, you get rewarded. And so I had a very successful college career, but nobody wanted to draft me on draft day. And so shortly after the NFL draft, I had my first free agent contract come in from the Buffalo Bills. I'm 22 years old. I signed a 3-year deal. And I remember getting to Buffalo, getting all of my NFL gear to see my name in an NFL locker room. It was unbelievable. We get out to practice. I'm day 3 with the Bills running routes and snap, my hamstring goes. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Day 3 into my childhood dream coming true, a hamstring injury? And so, you know, the NFL, we joke around and say, hey, it stands for not for long. And boy, they had me on a flight back to Texas so quick. I was out of there. But that was the first time that somebody sat me down. They looked me in the eyes, crossed the table, and they said, Johnny, you're not good enough. We're not going to keep you around. We're not going to let you rehabilitate your hamstring. We do not think you can help us win. And when I heard those words, I didn't know how to process that because I had a very successful high school career, very successful college career. I get to the pros and suddenly I'm not good enough. And so I came back to Texas. My agent found a new team the following year with the Green Bay Packers. And so I get to Green Bay when Brett Favre retired the first time. And I'm 23 years old. I signed a $1.4 million contract. I'm excited to be in Green Bay. Things are going good. You know, finally, I'm back on track. I get selected as offseason performer of the week. We get into the preseason. It was incredible. And then 3 weeks later, they cut me and send me home. And so this emotional roller coaster that I'm on, I mean, I was on the top of my game, Monday Night Football, Lambeau Field, first NFL reception. 3 weeks later, Johnny, you're not good enough. Today we are cutting you. And so at this point, my agent says, Johnny, I can't find a team in the NFL. Do you want to play in the CFL, the Canadian Football League? I mean, I didn't even know they played football in Canada at the time. And he sends me north to the Canadian Football League. I'm with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and I make the roster. I earn a starting spot on the team. You know, on this little detour, but it's only a matter of time until my agent gets me, you know, back in the NFL. We're back on track. And then 1 week later, I blow out my knee, torn ACL. I joke, you know, I'm on some random field in Canada, minus 29 degrees with a blown out knee, trying to figure out, you know, what is going on? You know, why is this so tough? This isn't the way it's supposed to go. And so at this point, my agent is telling me, Johnny, I can't find a team for you. Nobody wants to bring you in for a tryout. It looks like we're done here. And he goes, do you want to try bobsled? And I said, bobsled? Are you talking about Cool Runnings, the Jamaican bobsled team? I mean, that's he represented a bobsledder back in the day. He goes, yeah, Johnny, they look for former football players with a track and field background. I also ran track in college. He said, I think you'd be a good fit. Really interesting start. I get in touch with a driver. They call them pilots, bobsled pilots, at the Olympic Training Center in Lake Placid, New York. And he goes, Johnny, why don't you come out here in a couple months, push a bobsled around, see if you like it. I said, all right, but if my agent finds a football team, I'm going football. I'm out of here. And true story, 1 month before I'm supposed to go try out bobsled, I get a phone call from this driver. He goes, Johnny, one of my guys has showed up overweight. Do you want to come up now and compete in the U.S. four-man team trials? I said, well, when's the race? He goes, it's in 2 days. I've never pushed a bobsled in my life. And he goes, I remember like it was yesterday. He goes, well, all you have to do is get into the sled. This guy's lost his mind. But I went, true story. It set in motion this new journey because I started this bobsled journey in 2010 after the 2010 Winter Olympics. And so that gave me a great start, but it was a 4-year journey until they named the Olympic team in 2014, where the games were held in Sochi, Russia. And so what happened after, you know, this unbelievable experience, you know, we're talking about God opening a door. You know, one thing I struggle with is pride. I'm very type A. I'm very, a self-starter. I'm a motivator. And so I struggle with pride. And when bobsled came on my plate, when you grow up in Texas and don't have any snow and you think NFL, you can't take any credit for bobsled when that came. But this new journey to become a United States Olympian, it allowed me to dream big again, set in motion this new dream. The days after opening ceremonies, I get stuck in my bathroom. I'm taking a shower. You know, we're getting ready for an interview with the Today Show later that afternoon. And I get out of the shower and I can't get the door open, the bathroom door. And my roommate, he was still in the weight room. So nobody was in, you know, I didn't have a roommate to help me try to open the door. And so I start banging on the kind of side of the bathroom where my other two teammates were, to see if they could hear me, like a distress call. And turns out, I find this out later, they thought it was construction. So they put their iPods in, thinking that they're going to drown out some of the construction. But I get stuck. I'm in there for about an hour. And in the Olympic Village, all the rooms, it's very similar to kind of like a college dorm where you have a long hallway. And so I get the bright idea, hey, I'm going to start banging on things in the bathroom that run parallel with the hallway to see if I can create some noise. And so I get back to the bathroom door. I break down this door. I get out of the bathroom. And I take a picture of it. You know, I've got a pretty good sense of humor. And so I put it on social media. I'm thinking, you know, hey, maybe get a couple funny comments, maybe some retweets. But oh my goodness, in 24 hours, it got 28,000 retweets, seen by an estimated 10 million people around the world. It went crazy.
You can find Johnny's full interview in episode 149 of The Action Catalyst. And now our guest from episode 169, Vince Pocente, an in-demand speaker and expert on resiliency, explains how he used determination and innovation to rise to the ranks of an Olympic skier in just 4 short years, about 2 decades behind most of his competitors.
One question I get asked frequently is, how at 26 years old did you just decide to go to the Olympic Games? And the underlying question there is, how can I make a big decision in my own life? You know, this Hollywood notion that we just have this epiphany of clarity and we know exactly what we need to create, you know, is just that. It's a Hollywood notion. I didn't decide at 26. It goes back to age, 14 when I was seeing the opening ceremonies of the Olympics on TV. And that's when the seed was planted. But I played clarinet in the band. I mean, that wasn't exactly Olympic material. And nonetheless, that seed was planted and things just show up in our lives. And I call those defining moments. And over time, these defining moments showed up where, and then, by the way, a defining moment is that moment of emotional intensity. And so at 14, that would have been the opening ceremonies. And we have these moments of emotional intensity throughout our life that kind of push us eventually in a direction where I watched my buddies who had raced in Luge for a couple of years. And I watched these buddies of mine marching in the opening ceremonies. And I was in the stands with a ticket. And the first thing that kind of resonates with me for everybody that's listening is, resiliency has a lot to do with how you make decisions. And we normally make big decisions when we're uncomfortable. It's not this is what I want to create in my life. This is what I want to build. It's more a notion, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of being in this situation and something has to change. And it was at those opening ceremonies in answer to that question at 26, you know, never again. I'm just never again going to have that feeling of regret, of not knowing, of engaging. So moments of emotional intensity, defining moments, are always followed up by a decision. And we're creatures of habit. So that makes sense that we're creatures of decision-making habits. And most of those decisions are unconscious. So until we get conscious of the decision-making habits we have and say, wait a minute, you know, at 14, I just walked away. I didn't pay attention to this Olympic thing. At 26, I realized I might just make that same decision again and again if I didn't engage. So the next question is, so you made a decision at 26 to go to the Olympic Games. How did you get there? And you can make decisions all day long. Like, I want to go to the Olympic Games. I want to build a massive house. I want to buy a Lamborghini or whatever your decision is. But unless you get the massive subconscious neurons working in your favor, you're never going to be able to get that. The first sequence here is clarity, where clarity means that you have an emotional connection to what that goal is. And just walking away or being afraid that it might not work out, in my case, it just doesn't work. And so that is the beginning part of clarity. So you then have an emotional connection of where you want to go, and that's clarity. What I learned when I was ski racing is everybody tries to do what the competition's not doing. And at the exact same moment, the competition's trying to do what you're not doing. And I changed my mind of how I would compete is to do what the competition wasn't willing to do. And the distinction is this. My competition wasn't local or national. You'd think, yeah, I wanted to race on the national team. I was competing against other Canadians. Well, no. The Olympic qualifying standards were top 16 in the world. So I knew my competition were the top 16. And then to say, what are the top 16 people, skiers in the world, not willing to do? Because I started at 26, they'd been racing since they were 5. They had a 20-year head start. But if I did what they're not willing to do, then you can supersede what the competition's doing. When I was racing, I interviewed a guy who had a PhD in politics and sport, right? I got more information out of that half hour interview. And simply because the other athletes weren't willing to do that, what they were doing was, you know, doing more push-ups or grinding it out or getting on the ski slope or putting an extra 2 hours in the gym or whatever. But I, you know, when you do what the competition's not willing to do, you come up with competitive advantages that don't necessarily have to be huge things, just, you know, competing smarter. And a tool that I used while I was racing was I'm grateful for being the fastest speed skier in Canada, top 10 in the world. Because when you add gratitude to something, it's so much more effective. It's not an affirmation in such that it's more of a goal with an emotional buzz attached to it. And it's a trigger for taking your focus off what's not working and back onto that emotional experience. So when a thought is occupied with what's not going to work or this is or a distraction or whatever, you go, hey, ask yourself, is this taking me closer to my emotional buzz or further away? And if it's further away, you snap back on. And there's something called post-Olympic depression. And I have to say that gold medalists have this just as much as anybody that didn't attain a medal, you know. And it's really when you drive towards something for so long, and in this case for me, it was just 4 years. But I mean, I went through a real low part just thinking it just didn't happen. It didn't work the way I wanted to. And that's part of my message when I speak to groups is I don't tell the audiences that I didn't win the gold medal. So they're going, oh, my gosh, you're 10th in the world and you're in the gold medal round. And I say, hey, yeah, here's the video. And you hit a bump. I hit a bump. I at 138 miles an hour, I hit a bump and I bobbled enough that it dropped me down to 15th place with no second chance. And the reconciliation is I had to give myself a break. I forgot first that the goal was to get to the Olympic Games. In the Olympics, you know, that was the goal, to march in the opening ceremonies. Yet a year before the Olympics, I was ranked 10th in the world. I went, well, I don't need to just go there. Why don't I win something? And then so that became the goal. So I guess we come right back to that being present and being in that moment of emotional intensity of enjoying this moment and getting every bit of joy you can from this moment. That's how you have achievement. And that's when you hit a bump, you just go, yeah, shoot, I hit a bump. Oh, and move on.
Thanks for joining us for this special Olympic edition of the Action Catalyst. Be sure to head to theactioncatalyst.com to subscribe and listen to more episodes. And as always, thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe. To stay updated on everything that the Action Catalyst is up to, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Action Catalyst and Twitter at Catalyst_Action. Thanks for listening.